Accession number 12504, Real 2.
Squadron Leader BG, Real 2. You were telling me what the corpses were like.
Well, as you know, it was a terrible place for flies, fleas, ants, anything creepy crawlies, anything you think about. And of course, one couldn't do anything about it. You just mend the trench, and
was there a smell?
I was just going to say that. Oh, the stench was terrific, terrible. So. Because it being so hot at that time of year, a dead body soon starts to smell.
How close were the Turkish trenches to your front line, do you think?
Well, it varies considerably, but in some cases, a matter of 50, 60 yards.
Did you see anything of the Turks at all at first?
No. Well, you always see a glance of one or two running around.
Who was in charge in your particular part of the line? Can you remember? Was there a...
the officer in charge, I can't remember, I'm afraid. But we were sorry, I can't remember.
How deep were the trenches that you occupied?
five, 6 feet.
Were they very elaborate?
Oh, no, no, now and again you get a dugout, you see. And then, otherwise, you just go marching through communication trenches.
Did you have fire steps?
Pardon?
Did you have fire steps?
Yes. Fire step, yes. And every other man was sort of on guard. He used to go on up the fire step and just pass it with a...
Was there much fighting going on when you got into the front line?
No, it happened to be just a quiet, a lull of time. I remember on one occasion I was on water fatigue, and so I gathered up as many water bottles as possible, plus tins, old biscuit tins, to fill up with water. And having marched through the communication trenches to a well, which proved to be dry, so that meant another mile or so walk, and we came across another well that was pretty foul, brackish water. However, I filled up all the bottles and the tins and marched back again. it was very a great contrast to water fatigue in the Second World War. You could find a water cart and you turn the tap on and there was beautiful clean water, which the Royal Engineers had obtained from a local stream or well or something. And it was quite drinkable.
How many water bottles would you have each a day? Just one?
Well, allowed to drink, you mean?
For any use?
Yes. Only about a bottle.
For everything?
So, very difficult to shave or anything like that, you know. That was out.
Did you get lice?
Pardon?
Did you get lice?
I was going to come on to that. fleas. Well, we used to amuse ourselves in the evening in base, just sitting on the side of the dugout and go through all the seams of your shirt and your trousers, indeed housing yourselves and having a chat and a smoke. It all went in.
How difficult were they to get rid of?
Oh, well, we had a small packet of Geetson's powder, but that seemed to attract more than ever. Seemed to attract these lice.
Were there any features near you that you remember the names of? Any of the Turkish names for any of the features near you?
Well, I remember on one occasion digging a new trench one night, and we marched along a communication trench, then passed a dugout which the orderly there handed out a spade and pick and spade to every alternative, and suddenly we came to the end of the trench and marched on the top, just in front of Chris here, and not far from much above her. And we started by marking out a portion of ground to dig, and that's it. And of course it would be by luck to be handed a pick and not a shovel, where my friend, he got a shovel and a spot more cover before. But however, we had to dig this trench.
So you couldn't dig as fast?
Pardon?
You couldn't dig as fast with the pick?
No, well, I had not covered the old pick. See, he could march along with the spade.
To shield him?
To shield him. And I had a pick, so there was not much cover in the pick. And so when it was decided the size of the ground you're going to dig, you started with your pick, and then when time came, your friend had the shovel and dug so deep the shovel, and while I hid behind a blade of grass for cover, and I did another let's call it another stench, another.
You were extending the trench, right?
Yes, I was digging a new trench. It's a bit around the top of the ground, you see.
Were you under fire when you were doing
that? Oh, yes.
And under rifle fire?
Yes, and on several occasions. The word stretcher bears. So that was passed along the line. Stretcher bearers arrived and carried the casualty off.
But you weren't hit yourself?
No, no. And before finishing, the petty officer came along and with a rule measured how deep you had dug and how long your trench, piece of trench had been.
You had a quota?
Yes, or you, I forget now what it was, you had to dig. Because as you dug, you you pushed the soil, the spoil, in front of you, so as to make a something to hide on. You can ask something. As the deeper you dug, the better you were off for cover, because you just piled the dirt in front of you.
You said when you got to this part of the line, it was relatively quiet. But were there any attacks by you or counter-attacks by the Turks whilst you were there?
Well, a lot of the section I happened to be there at this time.
Was there any patrols going out from the British trenches in your part?
No, because there was no trenches there. It was out in the open, you see. We've just then, during the day, other troops would come along and dig deeper, but under much safer conditions.
You mentioned having a look through a periscope. Were there many periscopes in the trenches, or just one or two?
Well, I all along that. No one never took notice of that.
Did you know which units were on the right and left of you? You were with the Royal Naval Division,
yes.
The Drake Battalion.
Yes.
But which units were to the right and the left of you?
I don't remember that.
Was there much artillery fire in your part, or was it just rifle fire?
Oh, no, artillery fire were... It was constantly under fire from the Adriatic side and the European side. So it was...
The Asiatic side.
There wasn't much rest. When you got to base camp, you were under fire just more or less the same degree as you were in the trenches.
Did the Turks have many have a lot of machine guns in front of you? Was there much machine gun fire?
Well, it was very spasmodic, you know.
Was there any attempt to dig trenches out towards... dig tunnels out towards the Turkish trenches to...
Yes, constantly in places... There were certain amount of troops were digging their way towards attack for reconnaissance purposes.
Did you ever do that?
No.
What was morale like in your unit? Were people depressed or were they hopeful?
Oh no, we all seemed quite happy.
Were the conditions that you were living under intolerable or bearable?
Oh, bearable. I mean, quite bearable, as much as you like having bricks thrown at you all the time.
Was it hot and dry, or did it ever rain? Was there any rain?
Rain?
Yes.
Only occasionally, but then it was pretty heavy. But mainly dry, except in the winter time.
Were you there months?
Just about, yes. Then I was eventually invalided home with dysentery.
Were you wounded at all?
No. I was up in the line at the time, and my condition with dysentery got worse and worse. And I got permission to take off half my equipment, because I could hardly stand. I was so weak.
Did your comrades have dysentery as well?
Pardon?
Did your comrades have dysentery as well?
Yes, yes. I know one or two chaps who didn't come back. And eventually I made my way to the base at the top of Cape Ellis, to the camp and the field of hospital. And then
were there any drugs that they could give you for the dysentery?
Not very satisfactory. And
before we leave Gallipoli, were there any planes going over? Any aeroplanes going over?
Yes, but very few in those days. I can't remember. It was Commander Sampson, was it? But mainly airborne, or rather planes from Lugos or something like that, or Lemnos.
Did the enemy have any planes there?
I didn't notice any, no.
So you said you were taken out with dysentery to the base.
Yes.
At Cape
and sailed for Lemnos.
How did you feel about being taken out?
I felt pretty rotten about it. And sailed for Lemnos, then transferred to a hospital ship there, and taken to Alexandria, General Hospital Alexandria, where my condition got improved.
What did you think of the medical treatment that you got?
Oh, I it was okay.
Did you stay at Lemnos?
No, I didn't go ashore there. There's another hospital ship, transferred to the hospital ship. And went to Alex
What were conditions like on the in the hospital ship?
Oh, pretty grim. It wasn't a real. It's just a hospital ship with a red, just a troop ship with a red flag, a red cross flag, flying, and a lot of chaps were sleeping on the deck and sleeping on the tables. All casualties, different types, and got to Alex. I was in the tents there, because the boards were full up. And I improved. Then suddenly, or unfortunately, if you say, I got worse and had to report sick. And had a certain amount of treatment, but unfortunately my condition got worse. And instead of being sailing back to Gallipoli, I went to Mudos again by ship, by hospital ship, and transferred to the Mauritania, which was then which was being used as a hospital ship. I remember on my on going out of Mudros, I was below by the cabin, and suddenly the ship heeled over to starboard, and I thought the thing was going to capsize. And I rushed up to the deck, and it wasn't really happened. There was a German submarine waiting for us outside the harbour, and he fired two torpedoes at us.
Did you have red crosses on the ship?
Only a flag. We didn't have them painted. We were painted white and green. So
did the torpedoes did the torpedoes hit the Mauritania?
Discovered that two German submarines fired two torpedoes at us, but fortunately we had a most efficient lookout on the bridge, and he put the whole thing hard over to starboard. I forget which it was, starboard or so. The torpedoes missed us just a matter of several yards astern, and missed the ship altogether. When we straightened up, we put full speed ahead and away. Because submarines in those days didn't cruise very fast, so we were well out of reach. And got home to Southampton again, and put into to Hasler Hospital.
How long did it take you to recover? A long time?
Well, to recover, really, about 6 months, I think. Or 3 months. 3 to 6 months, I think.
What kind of treatment were you getting?
Oh, well, there's a Pucker Hospital, Hasler, you see. So it was marvellous.
And then you joined the Royal Flying Corps?
Yes.
How did that come about?
In 1917. I suddenly got an urge to fly, and got transferred to the flying corps.
Was that easy to get transferred?
No, this is a bit tricky, isn't it? I feel rather hurt about that. You're on now, are you?
Yes.
Oh dear.
Do you want me to switch it on?
Yes.
So you transferred to the Royal Flying Corps?
Yes.
Was it easy to get accepted by them?
No, not really. Because it just depended, a lot depended on how many people they wanted. You know, pilots or observers or whatnot. See.
Where did you go to join up?
Where was I?
But did you want to be a pilot?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Were you accepted as for pilot's training?
No, at first, no. Anyway, I transferred to the RSC. And it depended upon the casualties in France, or required, see. And in my group, they wanted so many pilots and so many observers. So from here to there, left turn, you'll be trained as pilots. From here, right turn, you'll be trained as observers.
So they just chose them up?
Just like that. Yeah. And unfortunately, I was an observer. And so I was trained as an observer.
Where did you do the training?
Reading. Where? Yeah, well, there's just lots of places. Lyme, Hythe, Reading.
Can you tell me what you remember about the training to be an observer?
Well, I was at St. Leonard's, training as an observer at St. Leonard's, and I remember a cinema was taken over, and on the stage there was a huge model of towns and countryside, and on occasion, and you were in the auditorium, is it? Yes. There were little lights would pop up in this.
In this model,
and you had to tap down the position, the